Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Movies and Booze. I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is indeed time for Movies and Booze. We are joined in the studio by Fionnuala Jones, Brian Lloyd, and newly minted Colchi, Gene Smullen. Good afternoon to you all.
You're a yellow belly, actually.
I actually am a biffo, believe it or not. I was born in County Tullamore.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was.
But I thought you were Dunleary.
My parents were living in Tullamore for about 15 years, and all their kids were born there, and then we moved back to Dunleary. So it was a third generation Dunleary, but they just spent a little time. Dad's job took him down to the Midlands. So
right, okay. Yeah, yeah, well, that's foreign travel, I suppose. Yeah, that kind of counts. Yeah, but now you've moved out of the pale
and
as well.
And now
yourself.
I'm Wexford.
I'm a Wexford woman now. So what wines do you bring us from Wexford?
I'm looking at trends. Lower alcohol, which is obviously, you know, looking at the generational level, you know, wine, what people drink is very generational now. And I'm also looking at organic wines, you know, which is another big trend. People are very much looking at sustainable, biodynamic and wines that are sustainably produced. Mm. So I just thought we'd look at two on-trend wines today.
Yeah. And is the biodynamic wines, are they lower alcohol as well?
No. They're not. No. They're full fat. You're all right.
That's all right. Because if you're not tinkering with it, you probably can't control the alcohol content as much.
The vintage variation is very much on. If you have a very warm summer, the more sugar you have in the grape, when the yeast is injected into the crushed grape juice, and it has more sugar to consume, the alcohol is going to be higher, basically. Whereas if it's a poor summer and it rains for the whole summer, there isn't that much sunshine, the grapes won't be as ripe. There'll be less sugar levels in them and there'll be lower alcohol. So every year, no matter what part of the world it is, if there's a vintage variation, you know, most of, say, the New World countries wouldn't have that much of a vintage variation. But the European countries certainly would. And, you know, in a cold, damp, wet summer, the ABVs would be lower just because of the fact that there wasn't enough sunshine to ripen the grapes.
Ah, right. Yeah. Okay. Though, given some of the summers they're having on mainland Europe, I imagine the opposite is the case.
Yes, well, that's very much the case because there's heat waves all over the place for the last couple of years. Yeah.
Right, so our two movies today, one is a pretentious foreign language film.
No, it's not pretentious at all, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
Smart arse.
Yeah. I don't know. You put in a foreign language, it automatically sounds more pretentious.
You know what? Bong Joon-ho talked about this when he won the Oscar for Parasite. There is a 1 centimeter fence you have to clear, and you are experiencing some of the best films you'll have ever seen that just happen to be in foreign language.
Yeah.
That's elitist. That is so dismissive. I'm surprised at you, Sean.
Jesus. Talk about overreaction there.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay, that's all right.
Okay.
But wouldn't it be the case that it's very much, you know, the younger folk? Fionnuala there would probably be watching movies with the subtitles on anyway.
That's the thing. That's actually
once they don't pay attention to the film.
But no. This is the thing. It's really become this this weird trend, for lack of a better word, that like younger people now have no problem whatsoever watching films with or TV shows with closed captions. Yeah. And in fact, I think K-pop has a lot to do with this. That you're seeing kids now are watching all these K-dramas and stuff like that. And that's why Squid Game became such a big hit and everyone was surprised. Because Korean pop culture has radiated into the mainstream, you know?
Yeah. So what are the two movies anyway?
Right.
Yes,
so,
Well, we were digressing there.
Sorry.
You were giving out to me.
Apologies. Yeah. The first one is I'm Still Here, which has been nominated for Best Picture. Fernanda Torres has been nominated for Best Actress. It is a beautiful, heartbreaking, but brilliant drama set during the Brazilian military dictatorship of the 70s. And then the other film is about a killer monkey, and it's called The Monkey.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. It is cool. It is cool.
Killer monkeys.
Killer monkey. Yeah. Killer wind-up monkey.
Which one is the one with the subtitles, man?
they both actually have subtitles.
Oh, do they? Like monkey subtitles?
Yeah. It's
okay.
Fabulous.
Right. What's going on with James Bond?
I remember reading...
A couple of months ago that the Broccoli's, that there was a deal with Amazon, but that, I thought that was just for like TV spin-offs, and that the Broccoli's who owned the film bit of it thought Amazon were just a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summarisation. But basically, yeah, Amazon had bought MGM for like $8.5 billion previously, almost entirely because of Bond, because they would get the Bond property. But even with that purchase, I think they only had like, I won't get the right percentage, but basically their percentage meant that stake meant that they didn't actually have very much creative control. Like, it still lay with Broccoli's. So they were trying to work on, as you said, doing more stuff, doing TV spin-offs. They did like a reality show.
Which was terrible. Did you watch it?
No, but it was about like trying to be as rich as Bond or something. And it was like a challenge.
Road to a million.
Yeah, 007.
It was like the greatest race.
Yeah, something like that. But otherwise, this kind of move towards the next film was at a stalemate, because obviously you've Amazon. Amazon is predominantly a streaming service. Bond, they would argue, doesn't really belong on a streaming service. It's a cinematic event. He's a figure of cinema. He belongs in cinema. And Broccoli was saying, there's quotes from the Wall Street Journal basically saying that she thought the Amazon people were essentially idiots and that they didn't like care for the property and couldn't move it forward. So then we have this week that basically Amazon have now taken over essentially full creative control over Bond now through this kind of other purchase. I think there are reports that they've paid again another billion to basically wrestle this back from the Broccoli's. Now, they've come out and said, look, we're stepping back because we want to work on other things. And, you know, they are still overall owners of Bond as a property.
Yeah.
But I think this was kind of just a move to get things moving along a bit more. But any Bond fan who I follow online and have spoken to reckons this is the beginning of the end for Bond. They reckon like Amazon is just going to look at this as like content, and that it's going to, Amazon's argument is that we can build this cinematic universe out way more, so it's not just movies, that we can do prequels and TV shows and stuff like that. And that's where the argument then comes then, where it's like, okay, so you are just looking at this as content, you're not looking at this as like this beloved franchise. Brian is, he's going to eat his hands.
Okay, can I okay.
Absolutely, I don't care about Bond. So
right, me neither. This is the thing, right?
Brilliant.
It is such, I'm sorry, it is such a load of, and I apologise for cursing, it's such a load of bollocks to call this, oh, it's turning into content or whatever. That is a load of crap in my view. You go back to something like Thunderball, for example, right? And Thunderball was this ridiculous, over-the-top comic book adventure. James Bond arrived in a jetpack.
Yeah.
You know, like Moonraker. They only turned out Moonraker because Star Wars was big that year. They were like, get Bond into space. I don't care how. We'll have Jaws falling in love with a tiny little blonde woman. Do you know that kind of way? Like, this idea that it's some sort of like, oh, it must be protected at all costs.
It has integrity.
It has integrity, and it's just institution and all the rest of it. And yeah, fair enough, Sam Mendes and Daniel Craig, they did take it to places with a lot more depth, I would say, than it previously had.
Yeah.
But to suggest that like it can't be, it can't, you know, oh, Amazon are going to ruin it, it's going to become content. Do the, like, sling your hook, all right? What are you talking about, all right? Like,
so who is going to make the Bond movies now?
Amazon.
Will there be more?
It's
Bond
Amazon.
Movies?
Well, this is the thing as well, right?
They're going to turn it into TV series. Sorry.
Yeah, like there's no director, there's no story, there's no script for
there's
this
no
next
Bond.
Installment.
There's no Bond.
Again, you're seeing loads of reports that like Aaron Taylor Johnson got a formal offer. I think I
Harris
talked about
Dickinson
this.
Dickinson was one as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's been in the running as well. He's a latecomer. Like
that would fit as well, because again, I think I talked about this a couple of months ago that they were at the time when they were looking, and they were still talking about it, they were looking for a quote unquote younger Bond. So all the people who were originally touted, like Henry Cavill, this is where it does get frightening though. Jeff Bezos was on Twitter being like, who should be Bond, guys? I'll tell the lads. Who should be Bond? What do we think? And obviously all the Henry Cavill stands were like, it should be Henry Cavill. But I think Henry Cavill has kind of aged out too much. Basically, nobody knows. Like, they reckon the earliest we will get a Bond is 2028, which would make it like a pretty significant gap between No Time to Die was 2021, I think.
Mm.
I think the last time we had a gap of that length, I think it was like 1999 and 1985, whatever films those were. I think it was GoldenEye.
Yeah, it was GoldenEye then.
License to Kill.
No, yeah, License to Kill from GoldenEye. I think that was like 6 years, yeah. I think, or something like that. Yeah, that was 1988, and then GoldenEye was 1995. So yeah, that's 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do, as much as I'm not like precious about Bond or anything, there is something about Bond being on streaming that I'm like...
Oh no, it cheapens it. It definitely cheapens it.
Even from a pure getting people out to go to cinemas and like supporting cinemas and supporting movies, I'm like, that gets bums in seats. You know what I mean?
It does. But like, I mean, the reality of it is that like Marvel and DC have just like clogged cinemas now with big spectacle, and Bond was the only one that could kind of like go toe to toe with them. Mm. So like, it would be stupid of Amazon to say no, it's going to be totally streaming and nothing else, because people will still come out for Bond to a cinema. Do you know that kind of way? But I mean, this notion of like, oh, it's been turned into content. It already was content. I mean,
oh no, of course it was. But at least Bond had a kind of knowing wink to it.
Whereas
so many of the other franchises
are so
take themselves
so serious. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, I mean, it's...
And you got to see nice hotels and stuff.
You did, yeah. Come on.
Like, got a nice song. Nice look at a few cars. Yeah.
So now, like, with Amazon, it'll be like set in a kind of a chain restaurant and he's like driving a...
I have a theory. The next Bond is going to be bald. Like, it's going to be
about time.
Right? I mean, bald representation. Like, you have a multi-billionaire owns it now. It's like, we're making Bond bald. Yeah. And you're going to love that.
Well, I mean, if it's not coming out until the end of this decade, if they choose someone in the morning, they will already have aged out of it by the time, you know, if they're looking for a younger Bond.
Because this is the thing. I kept saying Tom Holland, if they're going for that age.
Yeah.
But he, like, again, if you're talking about 2028, it's like, okay. Like, it seems like they've made no progress on anything.
If they offer it to somebody, they may well be bald by the time they get down to make a movie.
And the plan works.
Yes. Massive gut Bond. Right. Anyway, let's talk about our first wine.
Okay. We're going to go. Chile, Santa Rita, which is still the number one selling wine brand on the Irish market. And it has been for the last decade. What they've done is the very popular 120, they now have an early harvest fresh Sauvignon Blanc. Basically, what the limited release, it's 10.5 alcohol by volume. What they do is, and Sauvignon's a grape you can do this with, they harvest it early. And the good thing about harvesting Sauvignon early is that it still retains all its kind of freshness and the characteristics of the grapes. So by harvesting it before the, as I mentioned earlier, before the fruit is too ripe, there's going to be a lower alcohol level in it. So it's a way of creating a wine with a lower alcohol level. So this is very widely available. And actually, I mean, you know, as lower, it doesn't scrimp on the flavour. You're still getting all the acidity, all the characteristics, the citrus fruits in the lower alcohol version. This is aimed at what we call Generation Z. That's the generation born 1991 onwards. They're more health conscious, body conscious. They want lower alcohol wines. They want, you know, they eat vegan food, vegetarian food. You know, everything has changed. I'm a baby boomer, right? So we drink full fast.
We've ruined everything.
We ruined everything. You know, we're carnivores and we do everything we're not supposed to. Thank God. But, you know, wine is generational. So, the Minervois, which is our red wine, which has an ABV of 13.5%.
Woo-hoo!
That's much more my cup of tea. So, you know, and then you have millennials, but they don't drink wine at all. They're all about mocktails. They either drink full fat gin or not, you know. So,
These are the millennials.
So, you know, I mean, it is like consumption of alcohol is very much turning into a generational thing, and you have each generation has a different approach to it, you know. So what Santa Rita have done, which is not only Santa Rita, nearly every single wine brand or wine that's produced, they've looked at the market and they've said, right, you know, it's a bit like Bond. Let's create it to a specification because we need it, right? And because this is what our customers want. And so this is it. So it's the 120 early harvest. Let me just tell.
And what's the ABV in it?
Only 10.5.
Okay.
Which is because the average white wine would be about 12.5 to 13.5.
Sure. Yeah.
And actually, lovely sweet fruit. The acidity is there. That's nice citrus, limey flavours. Grand. And I mean, seriously, yeah. I mean, if you are on the diet or whatever, like the lower alcohol means less calories. So yeah, it's a no-brainer. And again, it's made to appeal to a specific market, and it does exactly what it says on the tin.
Does Gen Z buy wine? Even?
Do you know what they tend to do? They go for interesting stuff, and they tend to trade up, and they go, you know, they'll buy less, but they'll buy better. You know what I mean? And they're experimental in terms of their wine consumption, you know, so they're more adventurous in a lot of ways, you know. That's the ones that are into wine, you know. I mean,
yeah,
and
I
again, like everything,
most of them aren't. Yeah.
You have people who are really, you know, discover wine and say, God, this is what is, I love this stuff. It's, you know, but it's not, it's that it's history, geography, politics, economics, it's, you know, agriculture, it's everything. So they get bitten by the wine bug and they go to wine tastings and they become parts of wine clubs and all that, and they'll be much more adventurous. But the average Gen Z, it's girls come around, let's get Prosecco.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the same as any age,
yes,
really.
Yeah,
I would have thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Searing Brazilian drama or Killer Monkeys?
Let's go for the Killer Monkey.
Okay, we're going to be talking about Killer Monkeys after this.
That's odd. I don't remember locking this.
You wouldn't have to remember if my aunt had a wind-up toy monkey at the yard sale.
Oh, not a cherished childhood memory now, was it?
No, 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 no!
The coroner said it was an accident, but it was no accident. It was a monkey.
That's the monkey, which is it? It's really a wind-up monkey.
Yes, it's a wind-up monkey.
It's a toy monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the premise is the Theo James, as a child, found this wind-up monkey in the back of his absent father's closet. He opens it up. He winds it up the back, puts it down. The monkey starts hitting the drums, mm-hmm. and at the end of the little wind-up drum session, a random person is selected and killed in a brutal and random fashion. So it's not like as if the monkey just suddenly comes to life and starts stabbing it or anything like that. It's like, you know, they'll have a brain aneurysm, or, you know, they'll walk out in front of a train or something like that, or, you know, something will fall off the back of a truck and slice their head off or something like that. It's just randomly selected. And it's, you know, it's by Stephen King, and Stephen King, people forget, he was actually quite good at writing comedy. Like, he, you know, some of his stuff was very, very funny. And this is directed and written by Osgood Perkins. He previously did Long Legs with Nicolas Cage and Michael Monroe last year. It was a big hit. Everyone was talking about it. And again, he is somebody who I would not have expected, but is actually very, very adept at comedy. I mean, he played Dorky Dave in Legally Blonde, like, so like he has some kind of, I guess, kind of you know, he was able to kind of work it around or whatever. But I love this. I thought this was so funny. It was so, so good. And again, the star of this, Theo James, I mean, he's primarily known for doing stuff like, you know, The Gentleman on Netflix. He was in The White Lotus, the second season. He's known as a pretty boy. Pretty boy English actor, very suave, very debonair and all the rest of it. And he plays this total, like, just, like, nerd, nebbish, completely downtrodden, you know. And the reason why he the reason why he is like this is because when he starts up the monkey and it starts going crazy and killing randomly selecting people, he decides that he's going to have to cut himself off from everyone and just work like a menial job and make sure that he has no connections whatsoever. But he's brought back to his family home, and then the monkey is suddenly back on the scene again, and he's trying to figure out why it is that this monkey has come back into his life. And there's a whole sort of, I guess, subtext about, you know, the idea of we can try to ascribe some grand narrative to our lives. We can believe that, you know, there is a point to everything, but there isn't. It is, the universe is indifferent, that we just, you know, life is terrible and we just have to kind of get on with it sometimes. And as much as we can try to ascribe order to it, ultimately it is in ourselves to find meaning. It is in ourselves to connect with people and to find kind of meaning through that, not through some sort of grand narrative. You know?
Yeah, that sounds hilarious.
No, it is.
Life
it's
is
really
meaningless
funny.
And then you die. Yeah.
I mean, that's basically it.
Yeah. Why don't they just throw away the monkey? Or
it keeps coming
the
back.
It keeps coming back.
It literally keeps coming back. They throw it down a well and then they walk back in and there's the monkey there again.
Okay, right.
And like
okay.
they try to like, he like literally like gets like, when he's a kid, he gets like a butcher's cleaver and like chops it up and throws it away, and the monkey just comes back to life like a human thousand.
And is it one of those monkeys, you know, with the drums?
Yeah, that's
it. Oh, really scary.
Yeah,
that's kind of creepy anyway.
Oh, no.
But this is so funny. I mean, it's messed up, obviously. It's about a killer monkey. But it's very, very funny, very, very dark. It's exactly the kind of film that if you saw it half cut, drinking one of your wines in a cinema, you will have the time of your life. I mean, even at the press screening, which are normally very dry, very dull affairs, people were cackling watching this. So it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, and so it is in cinemas at the moment?
It's in cinemas at the moment. And don't wait until it's on streaming. Go to the cinema, Jesus. It is so worth seeing it with people.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. On the subject of a Bond running into trouble, one texter says, the beauty of classic Bond was its daftness. It was thrilling and funny. Oh, and it had Sean Connery. Someone else says, to say Moonraker was made as pure content because Star Wars is big at the time is unfair. Although it may be true they released the film because space movies were in fashion at the time, Moonraker was based on the 1955 novel by Ian Fleming. So the story wasn't just a cash cow to get Bond into space. I'm personally very disappointed by Amazon's purchase of Bond and absolutely believe they will greatly cheapen the franchise.
I mean, it was cheap already. Come on, like... Hello, yep. I'm Plenty. What? Plenty of Tool.
Yeah.
I
know. It was... It
Pussy
was,
galore?
It was a carry-on film with probably better sets. You know, and...
Right.
Nicer
Come
clothes.
On, like.
So, Neighbours is back. No, it's not.
No,
it What's happened?
Been.
Too many nude scenes in Neighbours? They've axed it?
Yeah, they should have gone to space. That's where they should have gone. Obviously everyone remembers the big goodbye, farewell. Kylie came back. Guy Pearce came back in 2022 when the show was cancelled. Amazon, lol, came in and saved it, revived it temporarily. But it's been cancelled now again. It wraps in December. I think the last episodes go out then. I think there's talk of them shopping it around. The executive producer Jason Harbison has come out and said that they're very optimistic about the future of it, whatever, but it needs to like rest for a while. But I mean, if this isn't, which is a shame because like I wouldn't consider myself a massive soap fan, but like there is still clearly a market for it. But it also just goes to show that like these don't work on streaming necessarily.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was broadcast other places, but like it doesn't, I don't know how to make it work within the streaming model and the streaming era that we're in. And then it is also because like there was such a fanfare made about the end of it, and obviously it was great that it was picked up again for 2 years and people were kept in jobs and stuff like that, but now it's like kind of going out with a whimper now, you know what I mean?
Is there any connection between that and buying Bond? They and couldn't afford to have both properties.
I mean,
Ramsey Street is a dear place. Yeah. I mean, gentrification is a real thing.
Yeah.
You know?
But then be Bond, be scared. I mean, if they can axe Neighbours, they could axe Bond.
Yeah. Send Bond to Neighbours. That's it.
That would be good.
I'd watch that.
But he'd be like chasing shoplifters and things.
Yeah.
That
I'd
would
watch
be
that.
That's probably what will happen, actually, come to think of it. So they've given a date for the. Is it only the second season of The Last of Us?
Second season, yeah.
Jeez, I don't know why I kind of felt like there had been a second season and I'd seen it, but obviously
not. Sure, it was the strike kind of put everything on kind of on the back burner.
Yeah, because it's like the first season came out 2 years ago, like it's March 2023.
Crikey.
Yeah. Time is a funny old thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, season two is coming out April 13th. Only 7 episodes as well. Short season.
How long was the first one?
I can't remember.
I want to say
might have been 8 or 9.
Yeah.
7 is just very, 7 seems
it's
like
a random
novelty.
Kind of a number. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about this is, and like, obviously, if you played the games, you know what's happened, and the games have been out for ages. If you've not played the games, do not go digging around as to what you think might happen in season 2, because that's what I did, and now the season is spoiled for me. So that's just.
They might change it, though.
Public service announcement.
I think they'd change it.
Do you think so?
I think they will.
Maybe.
I mean, the themes will be the same, but I think they'll change up certain aspects of it because you can kind of do that in the game anyway. Like, you know, like, anyway, the whole thing about like part two was that you can choose to be violent if you want. Like, you can get through the game without killing anyone. Like,
okay. They
do say that. Like, you can do it. It's ridiculously difficult.
Yeah.
But you can do it. Like, and that's what the whole film, that's what I always kind of took out of the game was that it's like violence is a choice. It's always a choice. You can always leave it be if you want. Like, you can sneak past, like Metal Gear Solid. Like, you know, that kind of way. You can sneak past everyone if you want, or you can just run straight at them. Like, and yes, it might be more entertaining, but you're going to end up killing a lot of people in the way. Whereas if you try to sneak past them, games are a lot more. There's a lot more depth in them, Sean.
Mm. Okay, well, they have subtitles now, I believe. So
they're
very intellectual.
They do.
But like, are they in the games? Like, is it the same amount of characters as we saw in season one?
Yeah. I think the Melanie Lynskey character in season 1, who was like kind of the big boss girly of the the others, she was a new character. And again, I'm sure there will be newer characters in this.
Well, the end of the little bottle episode of the couple who
they were in it. Yeah,
It was a spin-off game though, wasn't it? Or it was like a downloadable content for the main game.
Yeah, it was a DLC, But it was like, it was a big scene in the game where literally they found the bot. Spoiler alert, where they found the bodies of them, the two lads. That was a big scene where they found them, and it was like that letter was in it where I was like, I loved him, I'll never love anyone again, kind of stuff. Like, that was in the game, but
they built it out,
like they took that one thing and then built it, which is again so good. That was what I loved about The Last of Us, was that they could take something small like that, a small little scene in it that had a lot of, like, you know, purchase in the game, and then expand it into an entire episode.
And it was a fantastic episode.
Fantastic.
Probably the one people will always remember. Though, interestingly enough, and this is like a wine nerd thing, because you know that, like, the couple, they were always having dinner and they'd all, and I forget what the wine was, but like, they'd talk it up. But like, you can get it in Tesco's for 12 quid. You know, it's not a, you know, it's not a posh wine at all, you know.
Yeah.
And wine nerds were outraged by that, apparently.
Yeah, the wine people were mad.
Yeah. So is there any indication what's going to happen in the second series? Will it be the final series, or are we going to get a lot more?
Again, it depends how closely they follow the game. I would imagine they will want, like, from a TV commerciality perspective, they'll probably want like one more season out of it. After that, I don't really know where you bring it, because again, there have only been two, you only have two games to base it off. So kind of depends. I could see them maybe, again, if they're following the game really closely, maybe they'll split it into two. But this season is set 5 years after the events of the first season, and we're back with Joel and we're back with Ellie, and they're kind of, you know, there was a big decision made at the end of season one, which again, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
But it'll be kind of, again, how they're looking to kind of interact with each other and the ramifications of that decision that Joel made. So
yeah,
I'm very excited. So this will be like, it'll be following up after White Lotus. So.
Okay, so that's April the 13th.
April the 13th, yeah.
Yeah, on here, on this side of the Atlantic, it'll be on Now, I suppose.
Now in Sky Atlantic.
Now in Sky Atlantic.
Before. Might they have a difficulty though, like, you know, getting the likes of Pedro Pascal to even commit to these things anyhow?
Well, he's doing Fantastic Four. Like, he's, I mean, that's the big thing that he's going to be into next. Like, and but like, you know, like, it's HBO. Like, I mean, they can get people, like, you know, that kind of way. They can do it in such a way that it's like it works for them. You know, like, you got Nicole Kidman and stuff like that. You know, they got Meryl Streep for what was it? The Thing. Oh my God,
Big Little Lies.
Yeah,
yeah.
So like,
yeah,
you know, they can attract that talent. And the reality of it is that a lot of these actors, they just want to work. They like working. They want to keep working. And the nature of it is, in the business now, is that, like, the more complex stuff, the more kind of meatier roles are on TV. They're not on film anymore. And if they are on film, they're very, very small films that no one will get to see. So
there's no guarantee Fantastic Four is going to pop off. I think it'll do very well.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean,
it's iffy. I mean, God, I mean, look how bad, like, Brave New World did, like, you know, that kind of way. Like, so, you know,
not guaranteed.
It's,
well,
I mean,
that's, like, the Captain America film,
which
saw on the side of a couple of buses.
Yeah, I mean, there was a boycott of it and stuff like that. Like,
oh, why?
Yeah. Because one of the characters in it was played by a pro-Zionist actor, Shira Haas, and the character that she was playing in the comic books was a Mossad agent called Sabra.
Mm-hmm.
And BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanction Movement, were calling for a boycott of it. I know some film critics were honouring that boycott and refusing to review it. So, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah. Well, I suppose, you can't avoid that. Or that leaches into everything.
But, like, I mean, for something like Captain America, that kind of, you know, plays with real world kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
You know, that kind of way. You kind of have to expect, okay, if you're going to bring in the real world and bring in real world geopolitics, you're going to have to expect people are going to have strong opinions about it, because that's just the world we live in now.
Yeah. But would Pedro Pascal be getting paid the same for a series as he would for a movie?
Near enough.
Especially The Last of Us was such a
hit.
Like, such a big hit. Like, probably bigger than maybe they anticipated. Because it was, like, again, video game adaptations are hard to do or have proven to be not very successful in the past. And this one, again, critically adored. Lots of people watched. So it's kind of in the making of him. Like, I know he's been doing stuff before this, but it was really The Last of Us that kind of broke him into the mainstream.
Oh, yeah, I think it was the only, like, because he'd been in loads of things, But it was the first time people go, oh, I know his name now. Yeah. Rather than he was that guy that was in that thing.
I mean, he was in Game of Thrones.
But yeah. I keep forgetting he was in Game of Thrones.
He was the actor who was in the Conchitoro ad as well for Casillero del Diablo, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's how
there
I
you
got
go.
To know.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
So he's everywhere, you know.
And surprise, surprise, Severance is the most watched Apple TV show.
Yeah, overtaking Ted Lasso. So, but still no word on a season 3. Oh, but I would imagine that's going to be imminent.
I thought the whole thing was that he had it mapped out until like season 5.
He has it mapped out, but it hasn't been officially renewed. Now, of course, it's going to be officially renewed. When you look at like, it's as you said, it's broken their records. Number one series in history based on number of unique viewers from January 17th through February 17th. Now you hear that and you go, okay, well, streamers can just say those things. But even according to Nielsen, I think it got number one on Nielsen's top 10 original charts for the week of January 13th, which is obviously the week the week that season 2 debuted, and it's logged 589 million minutes viewed in the US over all existing episodes. And obviously they're looking at it like that's going to increase because there's like 4 or 5 episodes left of this season.
Mm.
It's obviously going to be renewed. I'm not being scaremonger conspiracy theorist here, but I am just kind of like, I would like the confirmation, please, because for my own mental health.
But say that 500 million blah blah, like how is that a meaningful figure compared to what?
That's the thing because that's the difficulty with streaming data, because it's just like what does any of that mean? Is it like how many?
Is that a lot? Is that a little? It's
did you watch the full episode? A lot of people are watching it. A lot more people should be watching it because I don't have enough people to talk about it with. But
it's weird. You can tell. You can always tell though, because like when you see it, and I know this is going to sound, I'm just sound so ridiculous, but like you can feel people talking about a show. Like you'd see it on your Instagram feed, you'd see it on your TikTok feed, you'd kind of hear people like on radio talking about it and stuff like that. And then when you hear Netflix saying, "Oh, like you know, Red Notice was the biggest film ever made, and it's, you know, 1 billion bajillion people saw it," and it's like, I didn't hear anybody talking about it. I didn't hear one person talking about Red Notice, and they're saying, "Oh, it's the biggest thing ever," and like, it's not. It wasn't. You're just pulling those figures out of thin air.
Well, maybe because social media is such a bubble that, you know, it's people who are like-minded people.
Well, like
all
that's
going,
the thing.
You know.
Like, I'm getting served non-stop Severance edits, and long may it last. But I feel like again, like I'm doing a podcast about it with someone, and even their friends are still like, "I've never heard of the show. What are you talking about?"
Mm. But they've heard about it though. That's the thing. They're like, "I've heard of it. I've just haven't watched it."
But they've no incentive to watch, and that's what I don't get. Like,
now I love Severance, so don't jump down my throat. But I could see how it mightn't be everyone's cup of tea.
Oh God,
they might
God.
Find it a bit too strange.
Weird,
and,
like,
you know,
it's weird.
So that 500 million, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam Scott also currently in Skibbereen filming a movie. So
is he?
If anyone sees him, let me know.
Okay,
please.
If you're listening, Adam.
Love you.
We're all a big fan. Love you.
Love your show.
I loved you in Party Down, by the way.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
So congratulations to James. If you know James and you see him around Kilkenny, don't hug him because the bird shit's still in his shirt. Right, let's celebrate his big win.
Okay, all right. We're looking at eco wines, sustainable wines. And this month, O'Brien's is championing organic and sustainable wines. And they produced a really interesting brochure called Sip Sustainably with Our Eco Wines. Now, basically, organic farming is all about vines grown without the use of synthetic chemicals, right? And the guy who makes this wine, this is from Minervois down in the south of France. And just, you know, so you were talking your stats. Here's some wine stats. Spain, France and Italy are the three most prevalent organic wine producers in Europe, right? In France, the southwestern Occitane region, which is where Minervois, named for the goddess of wisdom, is located. It's thanks to the Mediterranean climate, they can really grow their grapes sustainably much, much easier than, say, in northern France, where there's more marginal climates. So about 37% of all organic wine is produced in the south of France. So, as I say, this is a super wine. It's called Esprit d'Autumn, which means Spirit of Autumn. It's Boreal de Morel, M-A-U-R-E-L. It's 2022. And it's made by a fellow called Michel Escande. And he is totally a guru when it comes to producing organic wines. He's a biodynamic farmer. That's based on the principles of Rudolf Steiner, where they bury the cow horns and plow with using horses and horse manure and cow horns buried under the ground. To it's all kind of this wonderful, very esoteric approach to growing wine organically. He's called the Wizard of Feline for his farming practices because he actually bases them on the lunar cycles.
But
of course. I mean, what did you do when you tried the wine? You went, God, this is good.
Oh, no, it is lovely.
So,
yeah.
Exactly. This is made from 40% Syrah, 30% Carignan and 30% Grenache, which are the classic grapes of the south of France. It's a beautiful, robust red with lots of dark fruit, a nice firm tannin, and exactly what Sean said. It's actually lovely. So,
yeah.
Boreal de Morial, look out. There's a whole slew of organic and eco wines in O'Brien's this month. Look out, and they really want to try and get the message across and explain what actually organic wines are, just to let, so because many people don't really understand about it, and this one's a good one.
Is there something about organic wines that it doesn't give you a hangover? My wife said this. That's how I don't even know. Is that not? Is that,
No, it's not true.
Right. Yeah, everything gives. Everything gives you a hangover.
Okay, well, everyone just turned.
What's the word you used earlier? That's exactly.
All right. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And how much is that, by the way?
I didn't put the price on this. I think it's in around 10 to 15 kind
of price.
Okay.
Brilliant.
No, it's not
hugely
expensive.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Okay, let's move on to our second film of the day. Here's a treat for all you Portuguese speakers.
Tá olhando o quê? O que é que vocês querem? Cadê meu marido? Vai embora! Sai daqui! Vai embora! Sai!
There you go. That's I'm Still Here. So, tell us the kind of... It's set in the 80s, so it's...
70s.
70s, right.
Yeah, 1971.
So that's a bit of a grim time.
It is. Yeah. In Brazil, definitely, yeah. This was during the Fifth Brazilian Republic, which was basically a military dictatorship under a guy called Medici. And what's interesting about this film is that the first, I would say, 45 minutes of it, it's this really beautiful, really enjoyable, kind of like a hangout movie where you're just watching a family, you know, interacting with each other. They're going to Ipanema Beach. They're having beautiful wine and dinner together. They're listening to King Crimson. They're listening to the great music like Gitano Veloso and all the samba. And it's just great. And everyone's hanging out and everyone's having a great time. But what you see in this like first 40 minutes every so often is like army trucks will drive by. Or like the opening sequence of is Fernando Torres in Ipanema just swimming in the ocean, just enjoying it. The, you know, beautiful blue skies. And then a Huey helicopter flies overhead and you can see her just kind of look up and kind of regard it, and then she goes back to doing what she's doing. And it's this whole thing that like fascism comes in stages and then it's literally at your front door. They're literally kicking in your front door and taking your husband out, and that's exactly what happens in this, because the main story of this is Eunice Pavia. And it's based on a true story. It's based on her son's memoirs. Her husband was Rubens Pavia, who was this engineer that was a congressman. He was a Labour Party member. He opposed the dictatorship. He had to go into exile, but he came back to Brazil, left politics entirely, but was then kidnapped by the secret police and was taken away and was questioned for like 15 days. And so was she, and so was their daughter. And she was held for like 10 days and was questioned entirely. Like, what do you know about your husband's activities? Was he a communist? Are you communists? Do you have any kind of contact with the Czech Republic, with, you know, the KGB or anything like that? Yada, yada, yada. She's like, no, I'm with my kids. We've got a dog. I know nothing about this. And then she's released. And then it's all about her trying to kind of get in contact with her husband's friends to try kind of get it all together to figure out what happened to him. And it's really just about this idea of, you know, friendship, joy, music, being with people you love. Common decency is just as powerful a resistance as armed struggle and like putting car bombs underneath and often, you know, fascists on the street. That is just as powerful, you know, common decency
and joy and all these things are just as powerful. And like, there's a brilliant
And a need to hang on to those things, because if you're putting setting car bombs, you kind of lose that part of yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah, and like, there's a brilliant scene in a kind of like halfway through it where they're trying to, like, you know, they're going through the kind of things like where they're trying to build a case and they're trying to, you know, there is still the semblance of a functioning legal system in Brazil at this time, and they're putting together a case and they want to kind of get a bit of like media support for it. So what they do is they get interviewed by, I think, one of the kind of more left-leaning newspapers, and they're organizing a photo, and the photographer's like, look, listen, we want to have like a noticeable gap where your husband would be in the shot, and can you all look serious? And she's like, and everyone's kind of laughing and giggling with each other because they're trying to kind of pose for her. And she goes, oh, they want us to be serious. No, we're not going to be serious. We're going to laugh. Like, that's important. We should laugh. We should be like, why should we just, you know, be so morose about this? Like, we're still together. Like, we still have each other. And that's really what the film is about. This idea of the bonds of community, the bonds of friendship, the bonds of family are so strong and must be maintained in the face of fascism. And like, we see what's happening in America now. We see like Elon Musk giving the Nazi salute. We see Trump talking about like, oh, I'm just going to take over Gaza. I'm just going to, you know, screw the Constitution. I'm going to do whatever I want. And you hear people talking about that in these spaces, in progressive spaces, that it's like, no, it's community is what's going to stop these people. It's looking to each other and helping each other. And, you know, like it's in the contention now for the Oscars. And I think I'm delighted it is, because I think Americans and Irish people will get something out of this. You know, that kind of way that at the end of the day, it's the people next to you that you have to, you know, lock arms with and stand against this kind of crap, you know?
Mm. Sounds lovely.
It's beautiful. It's so good. And don't let the subtitles put you off.
Ah, no, of course.
And don't
not.
Think that it's all morose and depressing. It's not. It's a really heartwarming. It's so uplifting. I just go see it. It's so good. And it's being sold out all over the place. So good luck getting a ticket.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. And that's in cinemas right now.
It's in cinemas right now.
Okay. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Fionnuala Jones, Brian Lloyd, and Gene Smullen.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.